Howdy, everyone. This is Henry Derrick Ellis, and you are listening to Sonic Perspectives.
Lost and hungover, ain't no telling where she'd been. She said she'd run away from home.
Hey everyone, Gonzo the Jerk Face coming at you from the Texas Division of Sonic Perspectives. My dear old friend Henry Derrick Ellis, who currently sings for Act of Defiance and Thrown into Exile, has just released a killer new bluegrass album. You might remember him from the Forgotten Bands segment that we did on the Talking Perspectives podcast a few months ago. Henry was cool enough to chat with me about the new album, an independent release called The Devil Is My Friend. Here is what he had to say.
Dude, so this new album of yours is a little different than what I normally hear from you.
Yeah, that was intentional, but, you know, it's not contrived. You know, it took a long time to make it because I wanted it to be right. And, you know, I have a problem with a lot of, like, kind of modern folk or modern country stuff that's out there. So I just didn't want it to be, like, cute or kitschy in any way, you know?
Mm-hmm. Is there something that in particular bothers you about contemporary country music?
Yeah, but not specifically just contemporary. I mean, even a lot of the underground kind of, like, outlaw country and neo-folk stuff. I mean, just all across the board, it's like, I don't know. I just don't believe a lot of it. You know, I don't believe, I mean, I think it's easy to emulate something, you know, to pick up an instrument, or maybe it's not, I don't know. But it seems like more of a challenge to kind of find your own sound and do your own thing. But yeah, I just, without being too specific, I mean, of course, I hate, like, any country on the radio, but that's like, a completely different conversation, almost.
Right.
But, yeah, you know, there's something about, like, the different subgenres of folk music and country music, or just really all types of music. You know, when you get to the nitty-gritty and you start, like, digging into some of these subgenres, it just starts to get a little ridiculous, you know? And that's why I don't really know I don't know what to call my record. I mean, it's been labeled and tagged many things, but you know, at the end of the day, I just wanted to create something that was an amalgamation of all of my influences, you know, without leaving out the rock stuff, because there's some rock moments on there as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but at the same time, you focus so much lately, like on Act of Defiance and, you know, Thrown into Exile. This is completely different. And, like, I know that you've got, you know, something of a background in this kind of music, but I wonder how hard it was for you to shift gears, to go from doing something mind-blowingly heavy to this.
Well, it was not difficult at all. I mean, growing up in the South and the Bible Belt, you know, all that stuff is in your blood. It never leaves you. You know, you might travel the world and play different types of music, but, and it's not even, you know, the thing is, it seems like there's a lot of like rock and metal guys that branch out and do, you know, their brand of country or folk or whatever. That seems to be like a reoccurring thing, if I'm not, you know, I mean, I'm that's kind of what I'm saying, but all I can tell you is that, you know, being from the South, a lot of that stuff, a lot of that stuff had a profound influence on me. So it wasn't difficult at all. I mean, what's really hard, what's difficult is, like, you know, keeping up with some of the heavy stuff. You know, it's hard to find, like, inspiration, you know, when it feels like you're spinning your wheels, you know, doing like the same old thing all the time. So at least, you know, for this was kind of like a breath of fresh air in a way.
I gotcha. So did it just kind of bubble up organically over time?
Yeah, you know, I wrote some of these songs like 10 plus years ago, and, I don't, you know, without really having a direct plan, I knew I wanted to make a solo record at some point in time. I didn't know if it was going to be under my name or a different moniker or, you know, or what, I haven't been worried about a lot of that stuff. I think that's how things have to work for me nowadays. Like, it has to come together organically. It can't be too much of a struggle, because then it just seems like you're forcing things. And that's not how I like to work. So it did come together quite organically, but that stuff takes time. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're going to make something good and you're, and it's a, you know, it's my record. It has my name on it. I thought about releasing it under a different name, but I felt so strongly about the material and the songs and the lyrics and the art and everything. Everything was so hands-on that I thought that I just felt proud, you know. It was like one, it was like that one moment in my musical career where I felt like, okay, I've accomplished something by myself, you know, without the help of a band or being at the helm of a band, you know. It's just me, and I felt like I should put my name on it.
So you're responsible for, like, everything that was written, and you performed, like, almost all the instruments, right?
Yes, correct.
You know, one thing that I think really sticks out, and I mean this sincerely, is that is your voice. You've done a lot of things with your voice over the years. I've got a friend who sings country music, and he does it really, really, really well. And his, according to him, the secret to doing that is that you have to sing like a whiny baby, but do it like in a big man redneck voice. You don't do that.
No, you don't have to do that. I mean, maybe that's his thing and it works for him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's kind of that genre of music, though. You know what I mean? Like, this is a very underground, unpolished type of music, you know, and it has a dark folk tinge to it, too. But no, you don't have to do that. You know, I mean, I have a big problem with that personally, but it's not my thing, so it's fine, you know. I just I've been singing it for so long that I wanted to dig in and find the certain, like, tones and nuances of my voice that I haven't used before and try to use those. That's where a lot of the gravelly, raspy stuff comes from.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm a huge fan of, like, blues music, and mm-hmm. I wanted to, like, bring that element to the table as well, because that's one thing I haven't got to do. It's really hard to, I mean, you know, in, like, rock and metal, you know, it's you know, it has to be cohesive, but you can't experiment too much without really throwing a wrench into the machine, you know what I mean? So with this type of thing, I felt like I had room to explore. Mm-hmm. And I think that really helped a lot of the vocal performances.
You know, you mentioned a moment ago that you know, that it's got some rock elements, and like, that really comes out in one song in particular. Lyrically, "The Devil Is My Friend" from start to finish is some sick shit, dude.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to write a murder ballad, and, you know, that's the one thing I've always loved about traditional country, you know, and folk music. And, you know, a lot of that stuff, even a lot of that stuff is public domain. You know, a lot of the traditional folk songs, it's all murder and lust, and it is that. But also, coming from the South, a lot of just it's gritty kind of life. You know, like, it's there's a lot of things, like, from, well, I was exposed to, like, this environment growing up that wasn't the best for a kid. And I think that kind of thing helped shaped, you know, my interests and my tastes. So I don't know. That's the one thing that I wanted to go back to and, like, kind of rediscover, you know, some of this record. And then lyrically, yeah, a lot of it is inspired by traditional folk songs and that kind of, like, old school way of life, you know. And being from the Bible Belt, you know, I mean, that stuff is scary to me too. Like, some of those types of people, like, the, you know, that Old Testament kind of Christianity, something very unsettling about that. But yeah, "The Devil is My Friend" is again is a murder ballad, but I was, like, really just influenced by a lot of serial killers and, you know, things of that nature. Like, I wanted to write a song about, like, a vagabond or, you know, some kind of loner type that kind of made his own rules. So that's kind of where that came from.
Okay. I've had the album on repeat for a couple of weeks now, and it feels like there's an underlying narrative. Like, to me, it doesn't feel like "The Devil Is My Friend," the song, is self-contained. It feels like it's part of a larger story. Am I completely wrong about that?
No, it definitely fits in with the overall you know, story, dark theme. There's a lot of dark themes throughout the record, and you really gotta. I think the album is gonna take repeated listens to maybe pick up on everything at large. But growing up in the South in the Bible Belt, that did a number on me, man. You know, really, like, it kind of like helped. I don't know. I have so much resentment and bitterness towards organized religion and Christianity, and like, so there's a lot of like rebellious kind of themes within the record, like, in that regard. And you know, there's a lot of religious imagery within the record too, so I think maybe in that way that's how it fits together.
Where does that come through the most for you?
What song, or just
like let's pick, say, two songs that I think that you think really underscore that point.
What's Left of Us has a lot of that stuff going on. And there's a song towards the end of the album called Mom. It doesn't have any direct religious, you know, references, but if anything, maybe it highlights my stance upon, you know, the afterworld, or, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah, you know, I didn't want to be too obvious or blatantly expressive about these things either, you know, because I didn't want to come across in a cheesy kind of way, because usually, you know, in my opinion, that's what happens, you know what I mean? And but I don't know, you can stomp your feet and point fingers and start like exposing too much information, and I didn't want to do that.
Yeah, instead it reads like something that got lifted from the storyboard of a slasher flick. I mean, there's a lot of sick stuff going on here, man. I hope that this is like an outlet that, you know, that it's channeling something, that you're getting rid of it like this rather than in real life.
It's all stuff that it's dreams or nightmares or, you know, ideas. It's all one amalgamation of substance. It's all stuff that I've I haven't lived all of it, obviously, but it's stuff that I've needed to get out in this form. But to me, it's not all that messed up. You know what I mean? When you really look at how screwed up the world is, you know, and I think it's got a real poetic magic to a lot of the lyrics, especially matching some of the sound sonically, you know.
You mentioned What's Left of Us a moment ago, and, like, to my ears, it sounds like one of the most legit and authentic Americana bluegrass-type songs that I've ever heard come from somebody that has not made a full career out of that kind of music. I mean, it sounds to me like something that you would hear at, like, a dance hall in the middle of Central Texas on a Saturday night. It sounds like 100% real. Like, the whole album does, but that one in particular, there's something about it that takes me to somewhere where I have very little experience, and I think that speaks really well, like, for the whole album and that song in particular.
Cool, man. Thank you. Well, that's another old song. Wrote that probably, like, 12 years ago. I didn't finish it until I got in the studio, but that's kind of the case with a lot of these songs. I don't like to say that a song is done until it's recorded. Mm-hmm. And because, you know, when I'm in the studio with a particular song, I like to try to push it as far as it can go. I mean, it's all about the craft, you know. With that song, I knew that I wanted to make it more of a bluegrass, make it have more of a bluegrass kind of feel. And, you know, playing like mandolin and dobro and things like that on it, I was a real treat, man, because I never get to do that type of stuff. It does have a very traditional tone to it, but that's what I wanted. It's just not easy to capture that, especially in a studio, you know, all organic, you know, real instruments, no trickery. I think a lot of people that come from a rock background, they don't understand how difficult it can be to record that way. Because, you know, in rock and metal, everything is so perfect. It's on the grid. You know, you have that click track in your ear in a way that it's just not the same. The magic of a lot of that bluegrass and old country and all that stuff. I mean, one of the most magical things about that is that it was kind of loose in a very real way, you know?
Like, how else does it differ? I mean, you worked with a completely different set of musicians on this than, you know, and they all come from very different backgrounds than what you normally do. How did the experience How did that differ from working with, like, say, the Megadeth guys?
Well, without singling anyone out, or, you know, without comparing it to working with anyone else, I knew that going in, I didn't want to work with a lot of rock musicians because that's just not what I wanted. I mean, any of the rock influences or any of that stuff, you know, I knew that was going to come from me. I can do that stuff just fine. But, you know, I knew that the sound was going to be a lot bigger than that. You know, when you have such a broad spectrum of influences and, you know, a variety of different sounds and lots of different instrumentation, it's tough, man. I mean, I kind of like curated, you know, all the musicians. I mean, all of them are pretty handpicked to the T, you know what I mean? Like, maybe there might be like one or two that I got last minute because I couldn't get, you know, this other person I wanted, but they're all handpicked, you know, for a very specific reason. And I recorded as many instruments as I possibly could myself. You know, I don't play drums, so I have my friend Steve White, who co-produced the record, had him play drums. And he's an amazing drummer. He got to do a lot of things he's never done. You know, he's primarily a rock drummer, like a punk, a very like hard-hitting rock drummer in the best way, one of the best drummers when it comes to that stuff. But, you know, he felt like he went out on a limb and, like, playing drums like on a song like What's Left of Us. He's never kind of played like that kind of drum beat, you know, that like train kind of beat. And when you think about things like that, you kind of start to realize, and again, this has nothing to do with him, but you start to realize how many rock and metal musicians are just one trick ponies. Like, really, you know, you got these guys that, like, sure, you get them in a studio and they can play everything perfectly on a click. It's a different world. And then you can fix everything at the end of the day. Oh, no, it's fine. We'll use Beat Detective and replace all the drum sounds or whatever. There's no fake drums on the record. There's no, you know, just to be able to make a record like the way I wanted to was like a victory. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it was like a pop record or whatever, you know. But having all the musicians was a way of essentially just like, you know, painting a picture. It was just like, okay, well, I need this and I need that. I need this color. And obviously I can't provide that. So mm-hmm. where am I going to get that from?
Man, you're not kidding. There are a lot of instruments on this album. I see mandolin, banjo, dobro, violin, fiddle, pedal steel. By the way, that this John Schreffler character who does the pedal steel did an amazing job.
He's incredible. Yeah. He plays for Shooter Jennings, and he's like one of those guys that you can find him any day of the week playing in some dive bar somewhere, and he's just killing it. You know, he sits in with players and bands all the time, and he's just that good, man. Without him, the album wouldn't be the beast that it is. I can definitely say that.
Yeah, he added just the right flair to it just to take it over the top. Props to him. Congratulations for finding that guy.
Yeah, man.
So back to Steve, Steve the drummer. I never would have guessed that he came from a rock background because he lays the perfect groove down for the whole album, you know, and he doesn't really go overboard except for on Corpse Carver, the rock song on the album. So tell me about that song. How did that one come to life?
I wanted a few rockers, I wanted like a few rock moments, rather, on the record, and that's definitely the highlight there. And he does a lot of crazy stuff on If It's Not Too Late as well. There's like the pinnacle of the song, like the 10-minute epic. Mm-hmm. There's a jam at the end of that song where he's just like really going all out. But he's an amazing musician, man. He's one of those guys that can play anything, and for him to play in a way that, you know, where he's doing stuff that he's never done before is pretty spectacular. And he's a great engineer too, man. He's a great engineer. He's a good producer. You know, he's a good mixer. He's just overall, like, in the studio is just an amazing presence, you know. And he's been my go-to guy for a while. And I knew that, like, the only way I could make a solo record or a real record, you know, the way I wanted to by myself is if I had some good help. You know, not only that, but I knew I had to have someone that I could completely trust 110%. I trust him. And, you know, with that kind of relationship, I think I think you can push each other to play better and to try different things, and that's kind of what we did. That's what we did, and that's how we, I think that's how we were able to pull it off.
So this record is 100% organic, huh?
Yeah, real drums. There's no dumb drum replacements or anything like that, you know. It's just, that's not the vibe. I want to get real sounds going in, and you know, it's pretty homegrown stuff. I mean, it really, you've got two guys at the helm, you know, Steve and I. And we brought in all the session players, and, you know, like, it's a little intimidating at times, for sure. I remember one of the first sessions we recorded with other musicians just happened to be Sing for the Dead Man, and I brought a mariachi band in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm sure Steve was just like, what the hell is this guy doing? he's going too far with this stuff, you know? But it's like, that set the tone for the whole record. I was like, yeah, man, we're getting a mariachi band. I just got on Yelp, and I just hired this band on Yelp, and they're going to be here tomorrow. You know, that's the vibe, is just being spontaneous and having fun and just going for it. And, I mean, I was just very fortunate to have those resources, too, where I had access to a studio. That was a game changer, man. But anyway, yeah, Steve is an amazing drummer all across the board. But the rock stuff is definitely where he shines, and Corpse Carver is the highlight for that stuff.
There was one particular line in that song that I misunderstood right up until I actually read the lyrics yesterday, and I don't know which way I like it better.
Ah.
For weeks, I thought, in the darkness be my goddamn light.
Ah, okay. Well, and, I mean, that works.
Yeah. Well, I got one last question for you.
All right.
You seem to have a really, really strong bond with the Austrian poet George Trakl.
Yep.
Yeah. What's the story there, if you don't mind me asking?
I discovered his work, like, I don't know, maybe like 15 years ago or something. And this was right around the time when I was making a transitional move. Like, I don't know. I didn't know I was gonna like move to Los Angeles and spend a decade here. I didn't, you know, this. It's just one of those like weird things where life, I let life happen. It was like, I remember just thinking, it's like, okay, I'm going to let go of the wheel and just let life happen. And I discovered his work around that time. It felt good. It felt like, you know, I remember reading one of his poems. There's something like very innocent, but very, very dark and magical about his work. But then as I read deeper, I became enamored by the fact that he used a lot of the same themes throughout his poetry in the way that a lot of musicians, a lot of lyricists do, you know, like he uses a lot of like the same words and the same themes and even some of the same characters. Without blabbering for the next 20 minutes, I'll wrap it up here. He, he had this character named Ellis, and, forever, you know, it was just like, I don't know what it was about that. The very first kind of like little folk project I had was called To the Boy Ellis. And this is before I met Jarbo, and we put out a record called Sweet Meat Love and Holy Cult. And that kind of came out of that time.
Wait, you collaborated with Jarbo from Swans?
Yeah. Well, she sings on the last song of the record, Graveyard Country Blues. But
really?
Yeah. So we put out a record called Sweet Meat Love and Holy Cult. And it was like a collective. In my mind, it was almost like this crazy 60s spiritual drug-fueled kind of Manson family-ish. That was my take on it anyway. And I mean, she might have some different insight. But yeah, we put out this record, and I have a lot of songs on there. You know, we collaborated for some stuff, and then I was kind of, I threw a bunch of songs at her like towards the end of the project, and it, you know, a few of them stuck. Yeah, around that time, I had this folk project called To the Boy Ellis, and I wasn't very motivated to get it out there or really do much with it. I think I was really more or less just trying to find my sound, or trying to establish something. That's where the Ellis comes from. It's just something that's stuck with me ever since I read his work and his poetry, man. It's really dark and really beautiful.
You know, I do remember when you did To the Boy Ellis and Devil Is My Friend is miles and miles and miles ahead of way we were back then. And that's not a dig at you know, at that stab at doing this kind of music. I think it's more a testament to just how, you know, how far you've come in this particular style of music. It's come a long way.
I agree, but you know, at that time, that was sonically, it was just very lo-fi at that time, you know, and it was very just like almost like loner folk, one guy kind of like in a bedroom. And that's definitely not where I am now in my life, and that's not where I want to go. Mm-hmm. I can't wait to record another record like this. I have another record ready to go, you know. It's just a matter of like, now I feel like I need to decompress. I need a couple years before I can get back in the studio and do it all over again. Of course, like, money is a factor as well, you know.
Well, I look forward to the next thing that you do like this, because you're killing it, dude. This is a fantastic record, and I've recommended it to everybody that I know that is into this sort of thing. So I want to congratulate you for that. Great
Thank
job,
you,
dude.
Yeah, thanks so much. I appreciate it. And, you know, just want to say, it's like, a lot of people that have no interest in country or folk or whatever, it's like, I think that they might be surprised that they like this, because it's not, it doesn't have any of the negative connotations that country carries along with it, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it is dark, and I think that appeals to people that just have no interest in that type of stuff. But yeah, man, thank you so much. Thanks for your time. I appreciate it.
Absolutely, man. I'm grateful for your time. Henry Derrick Ellis, ladies and gentlemen. Henry sings for Act of Defiance, which features former members of Megadeth and Shadows Fall, and he has previously fronted Scar the Martyr and Lilitu. Henry's killer debut solo album is called The Devil Is My Friend, and it is available for purchase at henryderrickellis.com. Please remember to subscribe to us on Stitcher, Apple, and Google Play in order to get notified of all of our interviews as well as our Talking Perspectives podcast. Don't forget to like us on Facebook and Twitter, and you can also subscribe to us on YouTube. And of course, please check us out at sonicperspectives.com. Once again, this is Gonzo, the whatever I feel like calling myself today, and I'm going to take you out with a diamond among gems. This is What's Left of Us.
Now we'll covers. I pounded in my red clay to every stone that marked the graves. I'm doing just a new one, just. Doing just a new one, just. And now she's driving away. Up the truth. And all we are will turn to dust. And all if that's the path we choose, you'll destroy what's left of us.